Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Laura Anacle. Laura is a professional ballet dancer and sociology graduate who has faced the pressure of body image and eating disorders within the ballet world, inspiring her to write her thesis on the subject. In ballet, where thinness is equated with success, dancers often conform to harmful body standards at the expense of their well-being. Many eating disorders go unnoticed or untreated due to a lack of education among teachers and directors. Laura is dedicated to promoting body acceptance and addressing eating disorders in the ballet community, advocating for valuing health over thinness. We have a great conversation about eating disorders in the ballet world and the support that is required to ensure that ballet dancers are allowed to perform at their best, rather than having to conform to body standards that actually impact their dancing and may mean that they don't get to be as good as they should be.
To start the podcast, first, it's very nice to see you and to meet you. And is that a puppy?
You too. Yes.
This is a puppy. The screen is kind of blurred, but oh my gosh, they are gorgeous. What's their name?
She's Lumi, means snow in Finnish.
One of my friends has a cat called Lumi.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and that's really funny because she's from Siberia. And she's a Siberian, a Neva Siberian, so like super fluffy. So I wonder if they know that it means snow. I'm going to have to tell them that.
Yeah, in Finnish.
I will tell them. So thank you so much for joining me. Did you want to introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a bit about what you do?
So I'm Laura. I'm from Finland originally, but I'm a ballet dancer. So right now I've been working in Lithuania in a ballet company for 6 years. And I did my bachelor's in sociology, and I focused on like sociology of eating disorders and body image and like health sociology, basically. And like my own struggle with an eating disorder kind of prompted my interest in the subject and generally the like environment in ballet, like that kind of normalization of like diet culture and eating disorders and glorification of thinness was like it still like enrages me, and I'm still in it, you know. I'm still in the actively in the ballet world, just trying to change, like spread change where I can around me.
When you talk about your experience, what sort of things was it that you experienced or are still experiencing now? As you say, you're still in it.
Well, I had an eating disorder, which I never really got clinically diagnosed because of the stigma and around eating disorders in ballet. Like, it's strange that in the ballet world, especially eating disorders that don't manifest as anorexia are sort of stigmatized and not talked about. And those, like, for me personally, I even felt like I did something wrong. Like, I didn't even get the right eating disorder. So I had an experience with bulimia mostly. But over the years, it kind of morphed. Like, I preferred to just talk about it as, like, I had an eating disorder, because it changed over time so much. So it was kind of, for me, prompted by, like, I always had this feeling that my body wasn't good enough or not thin enough, and I didn't have that stereotypical ballet body ideal, which is, like, who has that kind of body, actually? It's, like, very unrealistic standard of, like, long limbs, hyperextended knees. Like, it's very niche things that are very idealized in ballet, like very skinny body, but yeah, tall, long legs, long arms, long neck, very like to create the perfect lines. Like, even when I was younger, like a kid, I had that thought, like my body wasn't that. But during my studies, I never received that feedback from my teachers, which like I was very fortunate in that sense because I know a lot of people do receive comments from their teachers about their bodies, and the thinner students in the class are praised, even if their like technical and artistic level are the same. There's like in ballet exams, for example, the thinner girl might get the better grade just because she has the better body type. Like I've like heard stories from friends, but in school I was very fortunate. Like I think Finland as a country is a bit more progressive, and like things are changing slowly, but too slowly. And then when I got into the professional world, I came to Lithuania, which is still very old school Soviet training type of country, and it's like even slower to change than Finland is. And I started getting those comments from like repetitors, from directors, and there was this one time that I remember after my first stage rehearsal before a show, my first show as a professional, my repetitor, like rehearsal director, came to me and said, "So you look like you need to take care of your body. You need to take a look at what you're eating and how you're looking because you look bigger than the other girls on stage in the costume." And for me, that was a big hit because I never, like, yes, I thought that myself. I had that in my head, but I never heard that from around me, from somebody with authority, you know, and I took it very seriously. So that's kind of where it all started for me. And I know girls who are in my company who've gotten comments like, "You will get the solo parts if you lose weight." And there's been weigh-ins within dancers, just the girls though, never the boys. So yeah, that's like, in what kind of professional job would you have a weigh-in? Like it's sounds like ludicrous to anybody who's not in the ballet world. It's wild.
It's fascinating because, rightly or wrongly, when you think about ballet dancers, your mind does instantly go to very small, petite frames, but very tall people. And it's the aesthetic, I guess, that is associated with ballet. And I'm finding it really difficult in my mind to kind of separate the two because I don't want to say that the body type that is associated with ballet makes it more beautiful, because then, that feels like fat shaming. However, if we're honest about it, that's why the kind of body type exists, is that as a society or within the profession, it is deemed more beautiful, more graceful, things like that. And I think that's like, how do you move away from that? How do you make it so that people don't have those pressures to be a certain body type? I mean, the fact that people are getting marked higher because they're at a lower body weight or what have you, I mean, it sounds completely barbaric, like you're saying, but it makes sense, but it shouldn't make sense, if that makes sense.
Exactly. But there should be, well, of course, like, yes, ballet is a very aesthetic sport, and it is a sport, like very like cardio based sport. So ultimately, if you do it professionally, like all of us, like the thing is that all the people in ballet, the girls who I've heard from who've gotten comments like this, there was never really anything wrong with the body. Like to me, I see like all of us who end up at a professional level, we do look like dancers, but there's this still, I don't know, like even people who really don't need to lose any weight get told that they should lose weight. It's this kind of I don't know, like bullying, that like pushing, like the teachers maybe think that they're pushing us to do better, be better. But it's actually really traumatizing. And like what I think it's just been happening for so long in ballet, like this kind of talk and treatment of people, and like the people with authority telling young impressionable girls that they need to look a certain way. So like just needs to change, needs to start from the top. Or, you know, like the thing I never understood is how people who've grown up in the ballet world end up becoming teachers and directors and do the same things to
Yeah.
the new generation. This is what I never understood. And now I have friends who've become teachers, and they luckily have, like, I know girls who've made a pledge that they'll never comment on their students' bodies. Like, they will never be the one to crush someone's, crush somebody like that, you
It's
know?
interesting. I think that it's something shifted in our generation because if I think about generally in society, our mothers were also exposed to diet culture, but they didn't stop it. And I'm not blaming this at all. I think it was accepted as the norm. Something has shifted in our generation to say, you know, we've seen the pain that our mothers have gone through, and we're not going through that ourselves, and we're almost standing up against it. So maybe that's where a similar shift has happened, is that the previous generation were exposed to it, you know, knew how awful it was, but didn't see another option. And now our generation are like, yeah, actually, we're not standing for this. And there is so much more than being a ballet dancer than just your size. I don't know whether you think that might be the reason.
Yeah, I think so, and I really hope so. And like my mother also like grew up in a very strict environment, and she had her own struggles with body image and things like this, but she never inflicted it on her daughters. Like, she never made any body comments or any said anything about our eating habits or all of any of that, but we saw her do things to herself and how she treated herself and commented on her own body. So it's still there and hard to get rid of. But with ballet, yeah, I really hope there is a change coming, because I think for like we need to try to shift the emphasis to have a long and healthy career, because with these kinds of habits, that's not going to happen. Like, you're going to burn out by your tw like in your mid-20s, you know. It's not going to last.
Absolutely.
Like,
And when you did your research, what sort of themes came up around that, around the pressures of kind of body image and eating that then led to disordered eating in ballet dancers?
so mostly there were some girls who had like family background and things in their upbringing who like that had an impact on the eating disorder, but sadly mostly it came from the educators and their teachers and coaches. And then like because the teachers kind of imprint this thought in the students' heads, the students start to there becomes like this you know, competition between the students, who can be the best, so who can be the thinnest, who can take it furthest. And it's really, really toxic environment. And then like that normalizes the like idea of dieting and not eating, and then like kind of becomes a contest, you know. It's all about who's the best. Like the school environments, ballet school environments, are really not that great a place to grow up in, you know. And also then later on, like social media and the general like diet culture and fat phobia also like played a role, because it's not just in the ballet world, it's everywhere.
It's interesting, I think, because often, particularly with eating disorders like anorexia, a competitive nature and perfectionism and things like that are often related. So if you've got people that are performing at a very high level in ballet, they're naturally going to be people that push themselves to levels that other people wouldn't, and you know, have that drive to compete and be the best. And so it's almost, you know, the people who then have the most dedication to performing at their best and perfectionism and stuff are the people that are going to thrive the most in that environment because they can push themselves more, but they're also going to thrive with an eating disorder. So it's like you're going to thrive in an environment that wants you to be thin, but you're thriving because you're good at having an eating disorder. And you know, that's so unfair on the people that don't want to necessarily engage in those behaviors because I'm sure they're absolutely brilliant dancers, but they're not going to go as far because they can't attain or sustain that body type. And also, you were saying earlier about how dancing is so cardio focused. I can imagine the implications for people's health is so bad things like losing your period and fainting and all the other impacts that it might have.
Like personally for me, like this like excessive compulsive exercise was a big part of my like eating disorder because I don't know, like you think that like yes, I was dancing 6 to 7 hours a day, but somehow in my head that wasn't enough. And then I would come home, like our work schedule was like we work from 9 to 1 and then we have a break from 1 to 5 and then they'll go back to work from like what, 5 to 8 or 9, depending on if there's a show or not. And I would go running in between, like during the break. And like looking back on it, I was eating very little. I was engaging in like other like purging and all these behaviors. And somehow, like, how did I do that? I don't know. Like looking back on it, was very not healthy. And then the like from my peers and from the directors, like, wow, you're so dedicated. How do you have the energy? Like you get the praise, you know, and that's the reward. And the eating disorder thrives on that kind of validation. At least for me, like it was all about the validation that I got from other people because I didn't have good things to say about myself. So I needed that to come from somebody else. And then when I get the validation, it just feeds into those habits, you know?
It's a survival mechanism, isn't it? Like if you think back to when we were cave people, like, you would kind of eat very little because you didn't know where the food was going to be, and you'd have to go out and hunt, and you'd need to run long distances, and then you would need to kind of perform at your best to be able to find food and stuff. And it sounds, it's so interesting what you said. I don't know how I did that, because if I think back to when I was ill with anorexia, like I think back and I'm like, I don't know how I had so much energy to do that on so much little food, because now I'm recovery, I'm eating loads more, and I'm tired all the time and have no energy. And you're just like, I don't know how, but it's that kind of that external reward is the thing that keeps driving you forward. And if you're getting that from people that you admire, that you're looking up to, that you are trying to impress in order to thrive in your career, it makes so much sense as to why you would just keep pushing regardless of the consequences.
And like to be fair, like then I was really ashamed that I wasn't actually like with the bulimia, like I wasn't actually maintaining a very strict diet because I couldn't, like I was devastated that I couldn't, like I didn't have anorexia instead of bulimia, you know? And I was so ashamed. I didn't tell anybody. And like all these behaviors, like yes, I was getting praise, but it didn't, like definitely didn't progress my career or make me a better dancer. I was weaker. I couldn't focus. I was lightheaded all the time. Like I couldn't actually focus on my work, like on the thing that mattered the most to me, you know?
And that's the awful thing about it, isn't it? Is that engaging in these behaviors, you think and you genuinely believe that it's going to make things better and it's the only option, and actually it takes you away from everything, and really has such a negative impact. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about like the way that you felt around the bulimia and why you were so ashamed of that. Like, was that, because I think that's a very common thing in society, is there's definitely like a hierarchy of eating disorders, and anorexia is at the top. But people don't speak out about bulimia because they are so ashamed. Because it's almost like, oh, I've spent so long restricting, but then I caved. And I hate that that is the thought, because pushing yourself through restriction like that should not be something that we admire.
Yeah, because for me also the eating disorder started as like restriction, like very strict restriction. I think for about a year I didn't actually like binge and purge or that didn't happen, but then I don't know, something switched and I started doing it and I was in denial for a long time. I was like, no, this is not a problem. I don't have bulimia. I've just found a way to, you know, like cope with this and like because I feel like I'm so hungry from the restriction and then I binge and it's okay because I can purge afterwards. But I think for me, why I was so ashamed is because it's not talked about. I haven't, like in school, for example, all the girls who had anorexia or had a very visible eating disorder, it was like the teachers intervened and they got help and they got treatment, you know? But nobody ever had bulimia. I think maybe people did have bulimia, but it was just never talked about, and because it's not visible necessarily. Like, for example, I was never underweight, so I felt like I don't deserve treatment. I'm not that sick. Things are not that wrong. My life was revolving around the eating disorder. Like, I kept thinking and scheduling binges and purges into my life. Like, where do I have time to go home and do this? And I was miserable in that cycle, but still I thought like I'm not deserving of like treatment or help because I don't have anorexia and because I'm not like emaciated, because people couldn't see it.
Yeah. And do you think as well, this is just an assumption, but I find sometimes that when you work, when you're within a group of people or a community or whatever, and everybody is a certain shape or size, it normalizes being that shape or size. And I actually found this on I went on holiday recently, and like I was scrolling, through Instagram and stuff, and everybody was looking perfect on holiday. And then I got on holiday, and I looked around the pool, and I was like, nobody looks like that in reality. And it was a real wake up call to me, like what we see online or when you're in a specific community, bodies are so diverse, and actually not many people look like the images that you see online or whatever. But I can imagine when you're in a ballet group, that is the reality. People do look like that. But then you step out on the street and it's like, whoa, nobody actually looks like that.
Yeah, like it's so normalized within us girls, like to talk in the dressing rooms, like, oh, I feel so fat, I look so big, like I'm not small enough to be a ballet dancer, and we're all like athletes basically, and we all like if we walk in the street and see normal people, we are all very like athletic, slim, so it is like this ideal body type is so normalized, and the diet talk and the body talk, it's also so normalized. I think in the ballet industry, ballet world, within girls, it's so normal to talk about these things that for me, like I was struggling with it. Like when I was silently struggling with an eating disorder, it was really hard to be in these conversations because all I wanted to do was leave. Like, I don't want to, especially like when I was trying to recover, it was very hard to be a part of those conversations where girls who are possibly smaller than me saying things about their body, how they're too big and not good enough. And then, like, to be in that kind of environment was very toxic. And I had a therapist tell me, she was like, do you think that it is even possible to recover in an environment like this? Like, I didn't stay with her for a long time, but anyway, she said to me, like, she thinks that it might not even be possible while you're in that industry because there is that level of like you have to maintain a certain body type. But I really didn't want to agree with her on that, and I still don't agree with her that I think it is possible. Yeah.
Which is something I wanted to ask you about, because I think it's hard enough recovering in society, let alone in the dance world. How did you start recovery and then navigate things like, just being in the changing rooms and having those comments?
It took a long time for me. I was struggling for years, and there was COVID, and like COVID really made it harder for me because I wasn't allowed to leave the country to go where my family is. So I was here. We used to do classes through Zoom, and it was so much less exercise, which gave me a lot of anxiety. So I like spent my days running, doing other things, but like I was in that cycle. Like vicious cycle of binging, purging, exercising. I felt like I couldn't see a way out, and because for me, like dancing is not exactly a very highly paid job, and for foreigners in this country, it's not very easy to get good health care in English. So I felt like there wasn't treatment for me, so I never really sought help because I knew like in the public healthcare system people don't really speak English. It's not really, I felt like I wouldn't be taken seriously because it's not anorexia and I'm not like emaciated, so a lot of it just came to like me. I just had enough of that cycle. I just like slowly started to like try firstly like it was a very long process basically and was very difficult to be in that environment. I tried to like speak up about it with colleagues who were like my friends who might understand and people were very supportive. But it was hard to basically reveal the secret because I hadn't told anybody what I was doing until I really wanted to get better. So it was not easy. I don't even really know how I did it, to be fair. I just had enough of
When
it. Like I
you
was so desperate to get out of that cycle. And like there
yeah.
were times when I felt like there was no way out. Like this is not a way to live. And I was considering like quitting dancing and just taking time for myself. But I stuck with it and somehow found a way out of it.
And when you told people about what you were going through, what kind of was the reception that you got? Was it like, oh, me too, or oh my God, how could you possibly do that? Or did people understand why you'd gone through that?
I think people were very understanding because I think most, if not all, the girls in ballet have some sort of experience with disordered eating, if not a full-blown eating disorder. Like they understand the pressure, you know? So it was like some of them were like, why would you do that? And there's never really an answer to that question, is there? Like, why? I don't know why. It just happened. But
Guess this industry is fucked.
yeah. But they understand the pressure, you know, and people were very supportive and, yeah, very nice about it.
And I mean, I guess kind of going forwards, you said about kind of a lot of it comes from the pressure within, and it makes it a very difficult environment. What do you think needs to change? Because it sounds like, do you think that there could become a point where body diversity happens within the ballet world, or do you think it's more of a, it's always going to be there, so we just need to provide support?
Both, I think. Like it's already happening. Now that I'm in like Eastern Europe, there is no body diversity here. But it's because it's very slow to change. There's very these like old Soviet methods in place, you know. But if you look at ballet companies in America, like a lot of them are way more body diverse already and it's way more talked about and progressive, you know. So there is a change happening. It's just taking a long time. And I really hope that with like new generation of teachers and directors, the focus is going to be more on health and like we're athletes, so we need to be training like athletes, eating like athletes, not just starving ourselves, you know? So I really hope
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
yeah. And for us too, like here, when we had the girls had to do a weigh-in with the director, and they would write our height and weight down because apparently we needed to weigh a certain amount to be able to be lifted by the guys. But the guys were never told anything about strength training. Like, this is also a big problem. Like, it's always the girls who are scrutinized. Like, we need to weigh, our weight needs to be low enough so that the guys don't get injured lifting us.
Right. Which is interesting because I mean I'm not a ballet connoisseur in any way, but when I've seen ballet, the men are also very petite, so it's interesting that there's not the same pressures. Or do you think that maybe they don't speak about it either?
Could be that they don't speak about it either. And well, at least in my school, the boys had it a lot harder than the girls, but I think that was more to do with the specific teachers than the atmosphere. But I think like already in school, the guys need to be like really, if you need to be lifting 50, 60 kilos on stage above your head, like you need to be doing strength training and it needs to start in the school. And rather than telling girls like that they need to lose weight, you should be also focusing on the boys and their strength. And also like pairing, like we used to be like you can't couple a girl who is taller than the guy and expect the guy to lift her or expect her to be light enough for him to dance with her, you know? It's just
Yeah, it's very difficult. I think there's so many factors, aren't there, that kind of come into play. And like you say, it does make it very difficult when the technicalities of things, like, you need to be encouraging strength training in men. You need to have, maybe have the women to be a certain weight and stuff. But none of that can happen if people are not feeding themselves appropriately, keeping themselves healthy, and they don't have a place, to talk about the mental pressures and the difficulties that they're going through. And I think, that for me sounds it's I think it's across the board in terms of sport and athletes, is providing that space where people can come if they have a concern. Because I, don't have experience in the professional athlete world, but from the conversations I've had people on the podcast, it's very much, you want to be the strongest and the best at what you do, and I mean mentally and physically the strongest. But actually, if you're not given that space to say, this is happening right now and I'm really struggling with it, that's going to affect your performance. And it makes it so difficult then if you're struggling with something, that's going to be on your mind, and that's going to be a distraction, and it will be something that affects your performance. But without the space to feel comfortable to talk about it, you're not going to be able to thrive in the work that you do.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like it was a bit hit for me to come to work here because in my ballet school, things were really good. We had physios and we had nutritionists who were teaching us all these things. So we all knew what we needed to do, and there were psychologists we could talk to if there were any problems and like help was available. But then to come here, like in my current or previous company that I'm leaving now, there's no support whatsoever. Like nothing. Nothing's provided. If you need something, it's up to you to find it, basically, which is not
And
good.
I suppose, no, I suppose that's the difficulty, isn't it? Is there's no regulation there, so they can kind of do as and what they please. But then I would argue, from what I was just saying before, you're not then going to be able to sustain and retain the best dancers, because people are going to burn out, or they're going to have struggles and go elsewhere, which makes it really difficult to then support people properly and have the best dancers available.
And there's still this hierarchy that despite the dancer's level, like technical, artistic, like how good they can dance, there's still this if there's one who is thinner and is just as good, she's gonna get the role. It's just a fact. Or it has a lot to do with the director's like personal preference, of course, too. But when dancers are auditioning for jobs too, like the directors can be really picky and specific about what kind of person they want. And that has nothing to do with the dancer's abilities sometimes, Like I got rejected for a job because I was blonde with blue eyes and the director wanted someone darker. Or like I had a director tell me that I was a couple centimeters too tall for the company. Like if I was a bit shorter, he would have hired me. It's very, very specific, tiny details that matter.
How do you deal with those cutthroat comments? Because they are literally just based on your appearance.
And when this was happening, I was 18, straight from ballet school. I was doing auditions like almost every weekend, traveling somewhere in Europe looking for a job with like 50 to 100 other dancers. And you were lucky if you got an interview, like, and if you even got told like what it was, like why they didn't hire you. So it's really tough, really competitive. I don't know. I don't really know. I think at that point, because of the level of awareness in my school, I was in a good place and I didn't take those comments personally. Like I knew it was about the director's personal preference and I just didn't fit it and that's it. Like there's nothing else I can do. I don't know. I think I just had a healthier mind, but if I was doing that, like doing the auditions in the middle of my eating disorder, I don't think it would have been, I think it would have been way worse. Things could have turned out even worse. But I got those kind of comments from my own directors, so Even after they hire you, there's a chance that they want to change you in some way to fit into the company, which to me is ridiculous. Like, you hired me, you saw what I look like. And afterwards, you want to tell me that, okay, so to be here and get roles, you need to lose weight. Just.
It almost sounds, and I hope this doesn't come across offensive, but sounds like it's so normalized for that to be how it is that people just accept it. And it's not, because to me, that's shocking. You know, I just think about like all the DEI stuff that people have to do in corporate companies, and you cannot hire somebody based on the way that they look or their background or what have you. And it's so interesting that in ballet, that's totally normal. That's totally acceptable. I'm kind of like, how have they skipped the loophole? How have they, you know, how have they got through that to make it like that? That it's so normalized.
I think it's just, they just justify it because ballet is such an aesthetic sport, like aesthetic art form. It's an art form, like you need to, I don't know, but still, it's crazy that that's still happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, people are just okay with it.
Yeah.
And not given any resources to deal with it also.
Yeah, and that was something I was going to say next, was just to finish our episode, you know, if somebody's listening to this and this is something that they're going through now and they're like, oh, you know, I've just got to like get on with it, but there's nothing I can do, it's the normal way in dance. What would be your advice for them? And is there any resources that you can think of off the top of your head to support somebody going through that? Because it sounds like a very isolating place, because it sounds like it wouldn't be the sort of thing that you'd turn to your friend who's also in dance and say, I'm really struggling with this, are you? Which I think that would be really supportive if you were able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it really depends on where you are. Like, in many schools, there are resources to help. But in professional companies, it's rarely the case. So I would suggest maybe talk to friends who are not in the ballet industry. I think that might be helpful. And like, or like family members who could support you and like find resources. But within the ballet world, it's such a, it's so normalized, but a taboo at the same time to actually talk about it. It's a strange mix. But like for me, it was also helpful to speak to colleagues and friends who are in the same position. But I would suggest, like, just talk to anybody about it. I'm sure like you will find somebody in your circle who can be helpful and like supportive. And it really, schools have better resources than than professional companies at the moment. But it has to start somewhere.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say, how it's like a massive, it's normalized, but then it's a taboo to talk about it. It's almost like this is normal, you know, it's so normal that we don't talk about it. It's like the elephant in the room sort of situation.
Like, there were situations where like we would go out to eat with colleagues and I would be very stressed, like I can't eat this, I can't eat that. Like, at the same time, I felt like I will be ashamed, I will be like judged if I order something healthy, like a salad or a soup or something very little, what I wanted to order. I feel like I would be judged for that. And people would say, why aren't you eating? Like, you should be eating. But at the same time, if I ordered something like a burger and fries, I would also be judged for like, wow, she's eating too much. She shouldn't be eating that. That was what was going on in my head at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it just goes, doesn't it, to kind of the pressure of it, like the, the dichotomy of the pressure is you're expected to perform and be an athlete working at your best, but then equally you're expected to not eat and be at a severely low weight, which the two can't go together.
Exactly.
So, well, Laura, it's been so nice to chat to you. Thank you so much for sharing your experience. Is there anywhere people can go to find out more about you if they're kind of, you know, interested in dance or struggling with their own issues?
Well, mostly I'm on Instagram. I use my, you can put my Instagram in the bio, maybe. It's my name, Laura Anika L for my last name. But yeah, you can find me there. I can always chat about this topic, you know, with fellow dancers. I want to spread awareness, make it less of a taboo, you know?
Yeah. I think that's, that to me feels like where the change needs to come from is the dancers themselves, to build that community of it's okay to talk about this and we feel the same, and then hopefully that can promote change. Well, thank you so much. It has been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.